The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
You are listening to Super Chat, the official school information podcast for Jackson Dell Community Schools. Thank you for listening in today. I am your host, Gary Puckett. And today my guests are Junior Senior High School Principal Fred Unsicker, Jessica Walls, English Language Arts Teacher, and Rudy Eckstein, Chemistry and Physics Teacher. This podcast is sponsored exclusively by Civista Bank, with Ripley County offices in Milan, Versailles, and Osgood. From personal to business banking, Civista has been helping generations of families and businesses achieve their financial goals for 138 years. Whether you choose to visit one of their nearby offices or bank on the go with the Civista mobile app, you can be confident they are looking out for you. Follow them on Facebook, and to learn even more, visit their website, civista.bank. Member FDIC, that's Civista Bank, focused on you. Our nationwide media network operates with a team of 35 individual show hosts around the country. We also have 80 syndication partners and 17 different media domain platforms. We furnish on-demand programming for over 3,300 communities across the nation. We offer the Super Chat show format for schools around the country. However, this edition of Super Chat is produced solely for the benefit of the stakeholders of Jackson Dell Schools. Well, I welcome all of you to Super Chat. Fred, let me turn to you. You have some new teachers on staff, and several have joined us today on the show. Could you introduce them by name?
Gary, it would be my honor to do so. With us today, we have Jessica Walls. Jessica is an English teacher, and we also have Rudy Eckstein. Rudy is a chemistry, physics, science-type teacher. And then unable to be with us today is Blake Sutton, who is teaching biology and biomedical sciences.
Very cool. Jessica, let me turn to you. How long have you been teaching?
So professionally, this is technically my first year teaching, but I actually started teaching at my local church when I was 15. And then more recently, I finished my student teaching a quarter early and was a long-term substitute at Anderson High School up in Anderson, north of Indianapolis. And then most recently, I spent a year on a Fulbright grant in Taiwan. I taught at a school in Taipei. I was their English teaching assistant at Zhongshan Junior High.
Interesting. Well, now, on this Fulbright scholar assignment in Taiwan, I assume you were teaching English there, correct?
So the funny thing about that is I was a teacher there, but I wasn't teaching English in the same fashion that I'm teaching English here. I actually taught their extra non-standardized classes. So I was a home economics teacher. I was a PE teacher, which was really interesting. I was an art teacher. I was a performing arts teacher, a music teacher. I spent most of my time with the health teacher and saw how they teach health at this experimental school that is bilingual. So I was teaching in English alongside a Taiwanese teacher who spoke Mandarin Chinese. So it was incredibly interesting, but I didn't go into the English classes, but I was in every other class.
Well, I assume from just daily exposure alone that you did pick up on some Mandarin or maybe the secondary language that they teach.
When I graduated from Ball State in 2022, I had a minor in Mandarin Chinese. So when I went to Taiwan, that was part of why I chose that country to apply to for the Fulbright. And I don't know how much you know about a Fulbright, but it's extremely competitive. So it was a year-long process just to apply. to get all of the necessary materials together. I had two essays. I think I had 15 drafts of each essay. The final one was one that was looked over strenuously by a bunch of people. I had a whole interview process. And my Mandarin experience was one of the things that gave me a boost in acquiring that grant. So when I went, I was expecting that I would understand pretty well, and that was not at all the case. But yes, of course, I picked up local dialect, vernacular, and met some amazing people who were extremely helpful in helping me get around. Taiwan has an initiative to be bilingual by 2030. So a fair amount of things were in English anyway, but I still picked up on a ton of Mandarin, and not just Mandarin, but a local language, Taiwanese, also locally called Hoklo, which is an indigenous language that a fair amount of my students spoke, in addition to Mandarin and English.
But it's a very localized language, almost, I wouldn't call it slang, but it's very localized.
Yes.
Well, if you had to say, sum up the notable differences in the schools within Taiwan compared to the United States, how would you describe those differences in a nutshell?
So I've said to many people that junior high kids are the same all over the world, which was a huge relief to me. I think in the U.S. we like to stereotype Asian countries, especially East Asian countries, as being extremely strict, and that the students are solely dedicated to their education, which is not entirely wrong, but not entirely true either. So the school system, how is it set up? Children get to choose what school they want to go to. There is no public transportation like a school bus that takes them to and from school. That is up to them and their parents to decide. They do get a government stipend to pay for their textbooks and their uniforms, but by and large, they are responsible for that. It's not very much. I think it's the equivalent of about 30 USD every year to pay for their own tuition. For the school that I taught at, I had about 1,000 students, I think, grades 7 through 9. That's a junior high school. When they get to the end of junior high, they have to apply to high school. So that's not a given. They have to take a huge entrance exam. And how well they do on that depends on their future. So the pressure is really on for them. They have an extremely busy life. They're at school from 7:30 to 5. They go to something called a bushiban, which is like a cram school, until about 10 p.m. And they work on homework until about 1 a.m. So my students were very committed to their work schedule, but they could still have plenty of opportunity to be goofy. They were still 12, 13, 14 years old. As a staff, there were some major differences. We didn't have our own classrooms. We sat in a group office, and that was where other teachers and staff and faculty would find me and ask me to look over and proofread certificates and signs. They were redesigning a what they call a future classroom. So children didn't have their own technology. They needed a computer or an iPad. They had to go to a special room to use it. So they were redesigning this room. They asked me to look over some slogans that they wanted to put in there. But aside from that, it was pretty similar. I saw each class, which was numbered. So 701 to 708, that was all seventh grade. 801 to 808, that was all eighth grade. I saw them once a week, depending on my schedule. And that schedule changed every 6 weeks. I was paired with about 15 teachers over the entire year. So it was a lot of things changing all at the same time.
Well, I've learned that you also have had experience working in the writer's workshop in Indianapolis. What can you tell us about the biggest takeaways from that experience?
Yeah, so the Indiana Writers Center, we have a summer program as a summer camp class. So we go to camps that serve underprivileged youth in Indianapolis, and it's run by my old professor, Darilyn Jones. She is an amazing person. And Barbara Shoup, who is a local author, We go to these summer camps, and over the course of the summer, we give these students prompts where they can write poems and short stories and memoir pieces about their lives. And at the end of every summer, it gets published into a book that is available for purchase on Amazon. And I've had to repurchase a few of mine because I keep losing them. I put them on my bookshelf and they keep getting missing for some reason. But the biggest takeaway for me with that was that the human experience is incredibly vast. I started working with them right after COVID had started, when they started picking back up again. And I had so many students, they ranged from about 7 years old to 19, who had lost family members, who had lost friends, who had lost so much, their homes, their jobs, because of coronavirus. So it was a very solemn atmosphere. But part of my job there was to take that fear and sadness and to turn it into something productive.
Yeah. Well, I assume that you love the rewards that the act of teaching really provides you to see students progress.
Oh, absolutely. We had so many students who, especially with the junior high school group, who would, at the beginning of the year, they were so scared of each other, they would refuse to write or share anything. And then by the end of the summer, you know, they have a whole catalog of things to pull from, to put together. And then to say that that went and got published is a huge thing for them when they decide to go to college. I was thinking specifically of the St. Florian Black Firefighters Union. They run a summer camp called St. Florian, and they have their high school group, and they help these kids get jobs, go to college, succeed in life. And so our camp, they say, is like a huge part of that.
Yeah. Well, I wish you much success in your new position teaching English language arts, and just keep up the good work.
Thank you.
So, Rudy, you've had 1 year of teaching experience. However, you've had nearly 10 years of lab experience, and you've had military experience. Let me just say, we've been around the block a little bit talking about some of the unique experiences, but you've had a real mixture that I could see that those life experiences would be very valuable. And work experiences, no doubt, would bring perspective to the classroom in terms of teaching a subject matter. Is that a fair statement?
I like to think that being able to see things from so many different perspectives, from military to industrial, formal training, a little bit of everything, gives me a nice rounded view of where I'm coming from and where I want to go and what to bring to these kids.
What would you say the military experience brings to your role as a teacher?
I would say when I joined the military, one of the biggest things that they really beat into you is the idea of discipline. And I really want to push that on to pretty much everyone that I meet, is discipline isn't necessarily like a bad thing. It's doing the thing that you want to have had done. For my own kids, like, they don't want to clean their room, but they want to have a clean room. So discipline is cleaning your room. For these kids, it's doing your homework. You don't want to do homework. You want to go play with your friends, but you want to have that homework done. You want to have had done all of these worksheets and have that knowledge. So when you get to the test, it's a nice, easy thing. So that discipline of doing the thing that you don't want to be doing, but you want to be done doing it.
Sure. Well, would you agree that with discipline comes structure, and with structure comes the completion of particular tasks on a regular basis, right?
Yeah. The structure bit is, it's one of those things that the military was also really good about. There is a manual for literally everything. There's a manual for going to the bathroom, which I had to memorize at one point on the submarine, because as you can imagine, being at the bottom of the ocean, everything is a little bit more complicated and a little bit more scary than it probably is in the rest of the world. So there's a procedure for literally everything, and there's a structure for everything, and that's actually really helpful, knowing that not just do I have to figure this out, someone else has already figured it out. Someone else has already worked out all the kinks. It's following along.
Well, obviously, chemistry and physics, they're your thing, and you've had experience with this. I'm just assuming that that experience makes it, oh, I wouldn't say easy, but maybe easier to get right at the heart of the subject matter when you're teaching it. Is that accurate?
I would say that if you sit in a classroom and you see the very complicated drawings of all these molecules up on the board, you can memorize all those things, and that's a big part of the knowledge. But until you've spent several years doing those lab tests in a demanding environment like the bottom of the ocean, or 10 years in an industrial setting where it's happening every 4 hours, every night, 6-7 days a week, and there's millions of dollars on the line on what you're doing, that knowledge never really gets put into that perspective. So now that I've kind of got my hands into it and dirty, I can really tell what's the important thing to know, what's the real big takeaway, what's that thing that if I was going to leave my job to the next person, what do I want them to walk in the door knowing?
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course. Rudy, this has been interesting. I wish you the very best of luck and achievement in your new position. I'm sure the students will benefit greatly, but great conversation. I love your comments.
All right. Thank you.
So, Fred, you do have one other new teacher that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Blake Sutton. I believe you said he will be teaching biology and biomedical sciences. What can you tell me about his background?
Well, Gary, Blake is a Jacksonville graduate, and I won't give out the year. Some of our listeners more than likely went to high school with him. He was a local basketball player, very good athlete. Before he even started here teaching this year, he was coaching for us. He coaches basketball, and he just wanted to get into the school system so he could have a bigger impact on children. Blake graduated from college with a sociology degree, specializing in criminal justice and criminology. He has spent, I believe, close to 10 years working in the probation or juvenile justice setting. So he's just phenomenal at forming relationships with kids. He understands some kids go through really rough times, and he has just come in and knocked it out of the park. He's gone through the Project Lead the Way training. He's working through a transition to teach program to get more knowledge in the biology area. And he's doing a great job. They're all doing a great job. I couldn't be more proud of them.
That's wonderful. Well, I have to say, across the board, this has been an interesting collection of conversations today. I learned a bit from speaking with each of you. I will just put this out there. I think the diversity of your real-life experiences does feed into a skill set that allows you to teach students maybe with a bit of focus that can't be there otherwise without all that background experience. I've enjoyed the exchanges we've had today. I wish all of you the very best in your new positions. Sorry, Blake was not able to join us, but he's a known guy around town. And I want to thank each of you for joining me today here on Super Chat.
Thank you, Gary. We enjoyed the opportunity.
Listeners, this program is a good one to share with your school-connected friends. We thank our sponsor, Civista Bank, for supporting this monthly program. You can follow Civista on social media, and I suggest that you check out their mobile banking app. And to learn even more, visit their website, civista.bank. And the very next time you are in your local Civista branch location, let them know just how much you appreciate their support of Super Chat for Jacksonville Schools. If you come up with a comment or a specific question for us right here in Studio Number 7, share it with us, email us, shout@theflypod.com. So for Jacksonville Community Schools and the Flypod Media Network, I have been your host, Gary Puckett. And our monthly program comes to you year-round on your portable media device or computer. Thank you for joining us today here on Super Chat. the official school information podcast for Jacksonville Community Schools.